We're holding on Chaf Hey Amud Aleph, the fifth line of the middle size lines. The line begins Behesbede. We talked about, the Mishnah talked about, so about some of the things that are done, but when a person passes away, the Kriya, the Chalitza, which we said is uncovering their shoulder, that's the Suda Savra. So that led us into a discussion of what happened when Rav Safra passed away. How that at first the Chachamim thought not to tear Kriya on him at all because they hadn't learned Torah directly from him, but Abaye told them that they have to, and the upshot was that they should tear Kriya by his Hesped. So now that leads us into the Gemara is now going to talk about what happened by the Levayas of various great Amiroi. So the Gemara says, "Kinoch nafshei de Rav Huna." When Rav Huna passed away, "Sabur lo isuvi sefer Torah apurye." The Chachamim thought to place a sefer Torah on the mita, on the bed, on the bier, where they're going to be carrying him to be buried. And the idea is, Rashi says, based on a Gemara in Bava Kamma, that they would have said, "Kiyam zem ashakasa bazeh." This person, Rav Huna, fulfilled everything that it says in this in the Torah. But Rav Chista says you shouldn't do that. This would be something that when Rav Huna was alive, he didn't hold you allowed to do, namely, as we're going to say, to sit or lie on a bed where there's a Sefer Torah. And now, after he passed away, should we do that and put it on his mitzvah? The Omer of Tachlifa, as Rav Tachlifa says, "Ano chazisei le Rav Huna, de boi le meis of Apuya." I one time saw that Rav Huna was going to sit on a bed. V'hava manach sefer Torah alei. There was a sefer Torah lying on the bed, so he wasn't going to sit on the bed with the sefer Torah together on it. Now there is in the Gemara in Menachos, there's an opinion of Rav Yechanan that you're allowed to, but Rav Huna holds that you're not allowed to. So what did he do? V'kaf kada aara. So he needed some place to put the Sefer Torah. So he turned over a jug on the floor in order to make a stand. And then he placed the Sefer Torah on that, and only then did he sit on the bed. Tosfos points out that the implication is we don't say that you can put the Sefer Torah on something higher on the bed. In other words, we wouldn't say, for example, that he could have put this jug on top of the bed and then put the Sefer Torah on it. Rav Huna would hold that that's not the right way to do things either. So therefore, he put the jug on the ground where now it's making a stand tall enough to put the Sefer Torah on, and that way he's not sitting on the same. That way, the Sefer Torah is not anywhere on top of the bed that he's sitting on at all. So Alma Kasava also Leishav Agav Mitzvah Sefer Torah Munachala. So therefore, we see that Rav Huna holds you're not allowed to sit on a bed where a Sefer Torah is lying on it, and that in fact is the halacha. So Rav Chista tells them, Rav Huna didn't hold while he was alive that you're allowed to do that. Therefore, it wouldn't be right to do it after he passed away. Now, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma that they did do that by Chizkiyahu HaMelech's funeral. They put a Sefer Torah on his bed. But the difference is, Tosfos says over there that, even Rav Huna might agree. Chizkiyahu had done an unusual amount to spread knowledge of Torah throughout the Jewish people. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that he put a sword in front of every Beis Medrash and announced that if people don't learn Torah, they're going to be stabbed with a sword. He had to do that because during the years of his father Ochaz, just the opposite, all the shuls and Bate Medrash had been closed because Ochaz wanted to make them forget the Torah. So now Chizkiyahu has to take extreme measures to get everybody to remember and learn Torah. And the Gemara says over there that in fact even the little kids in his time were familiar with complicated details of halacha. So Rav Huna might agree that somebody like Chizkia deserves to have this covered, but not otherwise. So they didn't put the Sefer Torah on the mitzvah. Next, the next thing that happened when they were going to bury Rav Huna, the mitzvah, the bed that they were carrying, the stretcher, whatever that they were carrying him out on, would not fit through the door. So they thought to lower down. They thought to lower down the mitzvah through the roof. In other words, there's a skylight in the roof. They'll lift it up to the skylight and then they'll lower it down outside using a pulley or something. Omelahu Rav Chista. So Rav Chista tells them, no. Hagamuna mine. I learned from Rav Huna. Chacham kvoide derech Pesach. the proper cupboard for a Talmid Chacham is that you take the mita out through the door. You don't lower it from pulleys using the skylight or something like that. It's not derech eretz. So sover lashnuim et puria lapuria. So now they thought, okay, well, if this mita is too wide, then we'll take Rav Huna's body, we'll put it on a narrower mita, and then we'll carry that out, and there'll be room to get it out through the door. Omer lahu Rav Chista, but Rav Chista tells them that won't work either. Hochi gamuna mine. This is what I learned from Rav Huna. Chacham kvoide b'mita rishona. The proper covered of the Talmid Chacham is that you take him out on the original mita that you put his body on. You don't move it from one mita to another. Shenema, and that we have a pasuk to support that idea. The pasuk says, the pasuk describes how in David HaMelech's times they were moving the Oren. The Oren had been captured by the Plishtim. After that, it wound up in the city of Kiryas Yearim, and it was there for 20 years. And now David wants to bring the Oren to Yerushalayim. It's in Aftorah, Parshas Shmini. So the pasuk says, "Vayakivu asarein ho'alekim el agola chadasha." The pasuk says they put the Oren on a new wagon. Now the point is, what new wagon? So years earlier, when the Plishtim had sent back the Oren after they had captured it, they sent it back. Just so you know, that's where the Elzebub seat. So you might want to set someplace else. So when the Plishtim had sent back the Oren many years earlier, they sent it back on a wagon. So now the point is, when we say El Agolach, and the Pasuk describes over there that it was a new wagon. So now the implication is that also they used the same wagon all those years later when David was transporting the Oren to Yerushalayim. Now, of course, you know, we know that David made a mistake by doing that. He wasn't supposed to transport it on a wagon, and Uzzah ended up getting killed. And then Hashem criticizes David. He says, "You said Zmiras Hayuli Chokecha. You called the Torah a song. Therefore, you're going to forget a halacha that even children know, etc." Fine. Marashah says, "Okay, but even within David's mistake that he thought that it's valid to transport the Oren on a wagon, and why would he have thought that? One reason that Mefarshim give is that he thought the mitzvah of carrying the wagon." Of carrying the Oren on the shoulders of the Kohenim or Leviim. Maybe he thought that applies only in the Midbar. Whatever the case, within that, though, he's using a wagon, but at least he used the same wagon that the Plishtim had sent it in. They didn't start using a new wagon. An interesting point of that, though, is that actually the wagon that the Plishtim sent the Oren in, the Pasuk says that when the Oren came back to Jewish territory, to the city of Beis Shemesh, the Pasuk says they chopped up the wagon and used the wood for firewood to bring a korban. They took the cows that had pulled the wagon, and they brought them as a korban, and they used the wood for firewood. So how do you still have the same wagon? So the answer is, one of the answers is that what it means is the frame of the wagon was still intact. The frame is the pastures made out of metal, so that they didn't use for firewood, so that they still had all those years later, and now they used it again to transport the Oren. The point is that we use the same Oren, or the same wagon, or in this case, the same mita as much as possible, so therefore Rav Chista tells them you can't transfer Rav Huna's body from one mita to another. Well, since there was no alternative, porum baba va'apua, so they had porus baba va'apua, so they had to break open the sides of the door in order to get out the mita, because otherwise it wouldn't fit. Next, what happened by the hesped? Posach alei Rav Abba. Rav Abba started giving the hesped. He said, roi hoi rabbeinu shetisha olav shechina. Our Rebbe Rav Huna would have been worthy that the shechina should rest on him. In other words, that he should have had nevuah. Elisha Bovo Gomele, but the fact that he lived in Bovo, outside Eretz Yisrael, that caused that he was not able, because the Shechina doesn't rest to the same degree in Chutz La'aretz. So then, Mosiv Rav Nachman Bar Chista. So Rav Nachman Bar Chista, Bar Rav Chista, really. So Rav Chista, the one who we just said before, the Talmud, he was actually a Talmud Chover of Rav Huna, and he was the one who had just given the instructions that you can't lower him out through a skylight in the roof. You can't transfer him from one mita to another, etc. So now his son Rav Nachman was there. But Amilor of Chonan Bar Chista. Another version is that it was another son of Rav Chista named Rav Chonan. Anyway, he started objecting. The pasuk said, "What do you mean that you can't have shechina? You can't have a person can't have the shechina rest on him in Chutz La'aretz?" The pasuk says, "Hoyoy hoyad Bar Hashem al Yecheskel ben Buzi Akoyin be'eretz Kastim." That Yecheskel had nevuah in the land of the Kastim in Babel. So tofach le'avua besandaloi. So Rav Chista hit Rav Nachman or Rav Chanan on or with his sandal. Rashi has two explanations. One is like he tapped him with it on his sandal, like the way you would do when you're standing with a bunch of people. You don't want to draw attention, so like you tap him with your foot to get his attention, and then you tell him something quietly. The second explanation, Rashi says, is that he hit him with his sandal, like to show, as if to say to him, that's not a very good question for you to be asking. And he says, "Lava minaloch." He says, "Haven't I previously told you, loy titrun alma? Don't bother the whole world with kashas, especially now that it's in the middle of the levaya and the middle of the hesped. You should know anyway. Your question is based on a mistaken premise because my hoya shahoya kvar." What is the word hoya? The pasuk says hoya hoya dvar Hashem. What does that mean? That it was already. So what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. One is it means that it was a one-time thing, but in general it doesn't happen. Or the other explanation, Rashi says, and Rashi Ksavyad says this also, it means that Yechezkel had previously had nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. We're holding towards the end of the middle size line on Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. The line begins Mai Hoya. Yeah. So in other words, even though Sefer Yechezkel opens with his nevuah of the Merkava and it says that took place, but Eretz Kastim, but you should know Rav Chista is telling his son, Rav Nachman or Rav Chanan, you should know, according to Rashi's second explanation, that was not Yechezkel's first nevuah. He had had nevuah previously in Eretz Yisrael. Now, so Sefer Yechezkel is starting with a nevuah of his in Bavel. But in fact, he had nevuahs earlier in Eretz Yisrael. So if a person had nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, then he can continue having nevuah in Chutz Laaretz as well. But Rav Huna is not like that. Okay, so they had the hesped, they had the levaya. Now they were taking Rav Huna's body to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. So ki askur lahasam, when they brought up his body to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, and Rashi mentions the point that based on a Gemara and Ksubas, that a person who is buried in Eretz Yisrael, nikva b'loy chet, he's buried over there without a virus. In other words, the fact that a person is buried in Eretz Yisrael helps to be mechaper for him. So now, therefore, they didn't want Rav Huna to remain buried in Bavel, they wanted to bring him to Eretz Yisrael. So, Omri Leila Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Rav Huna Osi. So they told Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were among the leading chachamim in Eretz Yisrael at the time. They told them they were maybe even the Rosh Yeshiva. They told them Rav Huna Osi. Rav Huna has come, and they thought it meant that he's alive. So Omru. So they said it's not right. Ki havenan hosam. When we used to be there in Bavel, both Rav Ami and Rav Asi were from Bavel and moved to Eretz Yisrael. Loi havalon the daluye reishin minei. We could never even lift up our heads because of him. In other words, because he was so important that we would be embarrassed in his presence because he's so much greater a caliber of Talmud Chacham than us. Now look at this. We've come to Eretz Yisrael, or Sebastian, and he's coming and following us to Eretz Yisrael. Does that mean that we're going to have to now resign our positions as the Rosh Yeshiva and Rav Huna is going to take over? You find a similar thing, by the way. Part of the story that we're going to tell now about Rav Huna's burial, part of that story, the Yerushalmi tells it in Masechet Kilayim and tells it instead about now here we're talking about the Pashtus Rav Huna, the Talmud of Rav, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Surah for about 50 years. Tosfos points out there is an earlier Rav Huna who was the Reish Galusa in the times of Rebbe. And then the Yerushalmi tells a somewhat similar story about him, and you have a similar thing where Rebbe one time is told, Rav Chiya tells Rebbe that Rav Huna has come from Bavel, and Rebbe thought again that meant that Rav Huna wants to take over because Rav Huna had been the Reish Galusa in Bavel, and he kind of outranks Rebbe, and then it turned out that it meant they just brought him here to bury him. So here, Rav Ami and Rav Asi had the same reaction. Omrulei or Lahu Arone Ba. So they told Rav Ami and Rav Asi, no, it's not that Rav Huna is coming in life and he wants to take over. It means they brought his Oren and they're going to bury him over there. So Rav Ami v'Rav Asi Nofel. So Rav Ami and Rav Asi went to join the Levaya. Rav Ila v'Rav Chanina Loi Nofel. On the other hand, Rav Ila and Rav Chanina did not go out to join the Levaya. Why not? We'll see in a second. Ika da Amri, Rav Ila Nofak, Rav Chanina Loi Nofak. Another version is Rav Ila went and Rav Chanina did not. So according to the first version, two of them went and two of them did not. According to the second version, three of them went and one of them did not. So the Nafak my time, eh? So the ones who went out, Rab Ami and Rab Asi and maybe Rab Ila, what was their svara to go to the Levaya? After all, they had already had the Levaya in Bavel. They're only bringing the body to Eretz Yisrael for burial. So why? So the Tanya, because we're learning the Braisa. When an Orin is with a mess in it, is being brought from one place to another. Oimdim Olav Bashura. Even in the second place where they're bringing him to, where they're going to be burying him, they do stand in a shura. They have the Menachemim stand over there in a line, or in two lines, and the oval walks between them, and they tell him, "Amokam Menachem Eschem." And v'oymim ala birkas avelim v'tanchumay avelim. And they even though this is the second place where the Oren is going, they still say in the they still have the Suda Savra. If there's any avelim there, then they have the Suda Savra in the city square, and they say the bracha, they say the special bracha that you say at that meal, which includes Baruch Menachem Avelim, V'Tanchumi Avelim, and they also, they go to be Menachem Avel. So Rav Ami and Rav Asi knew that Braisa, and possibly Rav Ila knew that Braisa, and therefore they went out, even though Rav Huna's Levaya had already taken place in Babel, but now they're having in effect a second Levaya in Eretz Yisrael before they bury him, and therefore they knew they have to go join Levaya. So Deloy Nafak my timer. What about Rab Hanina and maybe Rab Ila, who did not go out? What was his svara? So the Tanya, we learn in another braisa. Oren ha'ovim makam makam, ein oimnim ala bashura. You do not stand in a shura to be menachem the avelim. The ein oimnim ala birkas avelim etanchom avelim. Well, therefore, so therefore, they saw no reason to go to the Levaya. The Gemara says, and that says kashin adadi. Well, then we have a contradiction. What are you supposed to do? Do you go to a shura? Do you do birkas avelim, etc., when the aron is being brought to another place, or do you not? The answer is like kasha. Kansha shildei kayemes, kan b'shein shildei kayemes. It depends whether shildei is still intact or not. Shildei means the Rashi says is guf. So if the guf is still intact, if the bones, if the skeleton is still intact, then it's still considered as if like a regular levaya, and then you would go out to it. In this case, in other words, but on the other hand, let's say you can have, now a common minhag in those days was, we talked about it before, that they would bury a person temporarily for a while, for a very person in a certain place temporarily, and then they would take up the goof after the flesh had decayed, and it's only bones, and then they would carry it. So in the course of carrying it from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, the bones can easily get disarticulated. Now you don't have, they're not connected together anymore, and therefore you don't have the form of the body. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna, shildei kayemes hava. Okay, but in Rav Huna's case, his shildei was still kayem. His body was still intact. So therefore, the answer is, d'loy nafak loy saimur kayme. Okay, so what happened was, Rav Hanina and maybe Rav Ila, who did not go to Levaya, they didn't hear the whole story. They heard that Rav Huna's body had been brought to bury. They jumped to conclusions that it was probably not shildei kayemes, and therefore they didn't go. If they had been informed that shildei kayemes, then in fact they would have gone. Okay, so now they're ready to bury Rav Huna. Amri, so they said, heichen ninche, where should we bury him? Now, we know there's a concept that you bury tzaddikim next to tzaddikim. You never bury a rosha next to a tzaddik or vice versa. Now, of course, Rav Huna is a tzaddik, but it's not just that you don't bury a tzaddik next to a rosha. You also, a tzaddik should be buried next to other tzaddikim of his caliber. So therefore, they thought, Rav Huna ribitz Torah of Israel. Rav Huna had the schus that he taught a tremendous amount of Torah to the Jewish people. So like I said, he was a Rosh Hashiva of Sura for 50 years about. And Rashi refers to a Gemara in Ksubas that says that when the Chachamim in those times, the Talmud Chachamim would sit on the ground and learn Torah, and the Gemara says over there that Rav Huna had so many Talmidim that when they got up, they then shook out the dust from their clothes. There would be a gigantic dust cloud that was visible even all the way in Eretz Yisrael. So we see how many Talmidim he had. So therefore, so they figured Rav Huna did that. Rav Chia ribitz Torah Yisrael. Rav Chia in his time had also spread tremendous knowledge of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia about the whole famous story where Rav Chia would go around from one town to another teaching the kids Chumash and Mishnayos, and then they'd teach each other, and that way he made sure the Torah would never be forgotten by the Jewish people. So therefore, so it's appropriate. So uh, So therefore, so both of them did the same kind of thing, teaching a tremendous amount of Torah. Therefore, it's appropriate that Rav Huna should be buried together with Rav Chiya. Now, here's where Tosfos points out that the Yerushalmi that I was mentioning before from Yerushalmi and Kilayim, the Mishnah talks about over there about Tachrichim, so therefore the Gemara digresses over there to talk about certain things involving burial and involving Misa and Plura. So it mentions over there that Rav Chiya had told Rebbe that Rav Huna has come from Babel, and Rebbe was alarmed until Rav Chiya told him. I don't mean that he came when he's alive, he came after he passed away. Here we're saying that Rav Chiya had passed away before. So here's where Tosfos points out that there were two Rav Hunas. Now, actually, there were more, but for our purposes, there were two Rav Hunas. There was Rav Huna Resh Galusa, who lived in the time of Rebbe. And then a couple of generations later, you had Rav Huna, the Talmud of Rav, which is the one who's being discussed in the Gemara over here. On the other hand, though, the Yerushalmi seems to say over there that this is the continuation of the story over here about how they buried him. The Yerushalmi mentions it about Rav Huna Resh Galusa. So it's a little hard to understand, although there is the interesting point. Reb Shrita Goin writes in his Igeres, he says that Rav Huna, the famous Rav Huna, the one who was the Talmud of Rav, was from the family of the Rosh Galusa. So that being the case then, maybe he himself wasn't the Resh Galusa, unlike the earlier Rav Huna, but he was from that family, and therefore maybe the Yerushalmi in a looser sense calls him the Resh Galusa. So the story continues. So they're going to bury him together with Rav Chiya. The question is, man ma'ayalei, who's going to bring him in? Rav Chiya was such a high level tzaddik that anybody that you can't just have stam anybody goes in there to bury Rav Chiya. It would be they could be harmed by the kedusha of Rav Chiya. Omelahu Rav Choga. So Rav Choga tells them, Anoma Yumalei. I will bring him in over there. Why do I have the schus to do that? In the Yerushalmi, actually, when Rav Choga, Rav Chagai, it calls him over there or whatever, when he tells the Chachamim that, they say, what are you looking for excuses? What, you're an old man yourself. The Yerushalmi says he was 80 years old. So what, you're looking for an excuse to be buried next to Rav Chiya yourself? You figure you're gonna end up getting killed in there and you'll be buried right there. So he tells them, first of all, I knew all of my Talmud. I knew in those times the Gemara, of course, hadn't been written yet; it was still being composed. But I knew all of what became the Talmud, all of what the explanations in the Mishnayos, and I had it solid. Yukimta means literally that I upheld it. In other words, I knew it. I knew it inside and out. Kad havena batmanit shrishnin, when I was 18 years old, and v'lechozili keri, and also I've never become a baal keri. I never had an emission of keri, except of course when he was with his wife. Marsha says these two things go together. Even though when I was 18, I was still partifed in learning Torah, and usually 18 is the time to get married, and that's the age when if a man is not getting married, then he's subject to carry. But Rav Choga is saying that I didn't have that problem. I was completely involved in learning Torah, and I was Tohar in my group and never became a Baal Keri. And furthermore, Rav Choga continues, Umashama Leikameh, I used to serve Rav Huna personally. Rav Choga had also been from Babel and moved to Eretz Yisrael. The Yadi Ba'uvdeh, and I know of the special great things that Rav Huna did. For example, the Yom Echad is Apichalei Ritzur de Tefillin. One time, his tefillin strap turned inside out, like this. The outside is supposed to be black. The inside is usually white or off-white or whatever. So one time it turned over, and Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim is that the black has to be on the outside. So he was so bothered by that, the Yosef Allah, Borin Tanisa, that he fasted 40 fasts to be mechaper for that. The Alter Rebbe gives us in Tanya as an example of where we see that a person, it's not really a matter of, a person is obviously not required to fast for that, it's midat chassidus, but it's an example of a person realizes that it's a simen min hashamayim, that there's something that's not quite right, and therefore he fasts, in order to be like a korban oila, in order that he should be back in Hashem's good graces as much as before. So in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it brings this. However, it limits it to now like this. You know, we have all the time. We wear our tefillin, and the straps that hang down from your shorosh regularly get turned inside out. So we're not fasting all the time. So the vort is, it says that this applies only to the part of the strap of the shoyad that goes around the arm the first time, and the part of the strap of the shorosh that goes around the head. If any of those get turned inside out, then it's appropriate to fast or give some tzedakah or whatever. If the rest of it, the rest of the strap that you wrap around your arm and around your hand, or the rest of the straps that hang down from your head, if those get turned inside out, no big deal. Anyway, so therefore, sort of Chaga is saying that based on all of that, I should have the schus to bring Rav Huna's body in to be buried in the same cave where Rav Chiya is buried. So Eilei, so sure enough, he brought him in. Have a gun in Yehuda mimine davua v'chizkiya mismalei. Now he went in and he found that now Rav Chiya had two sons, two twin sons, Yehuda and Chizkiya, who were great Talmid Chachamim in their own right. We often have in the Gemara, it mentions Bnei Rav Chizkiya, so that's who they were. The Gemara also mentions Bava Metzia, for example, that one time Rebbe had the three of them davening by the Amud, Rav Chiya accompanied by his two sons, and they almost brought Mashiach with their trilis, tremendously high-level tzaddik. So Yehuda was lying on the right side of Rav Chiya, and Chizkiya was lying on his left side. Amala Yehuda l'Chizkiya. So Yehuda, now this is it, they'd all passed away already, but Yehuda says to Chizkiya, Kum miduchte, I mean, we know that tzaddikim afilu b'misasim kruim chayim, so in that sense, then Yehuda, even after 120, even after he passed away, is able to speak to Chizkiya and tell him what to do. On the other hand, the Meiri says that it may be a mashal, it may mean, in other words, that the Chachamim of that time determined that the right thing to do would be, since Rav Huna should be buried next to Rav Chiya, not just in the same cave, then they decided, they sat down and decided, api halacha, that it would be right to unbury Chizkiya, to move his body in order to bury Rav Huna there. So the Gemara is expressing that with the phrasing that Yehuda says to Chizkiya to move. So Yehuda says to Chizkiya, Kum miduchta, get up and move from your place, delav orach ara to koyim Rav Huna, because not derech eretz, that Rav Huna should be standing there waiting to be buried. So we need to make room for him. Bahadi de koyim, as Chizkiya was getting up to make room for Rav Huna, or according to the Meiri, as they're digging up Chizkiya's grave to make room to put Rav Huna there, come Bahadei amuda de nura, a pillar of fire came up together with him. Chazir of Chogar, saw that pillar of fire, Ivis, and he was frightened. It shows the high level of Grusha that Tzadikim were dealing with over here. Zakhtel Aron even Nafak Osa. So he stood up the Aron and he left. Vahaidalay Ianish Onash. So the reason why he was not punished or harmed by the fire, Mishum de Zakhtel Aron de Rav Huna, is because he stood up Rav Huna's Aron. So in other words, preposterous, we would understand that it means, in other words, he used Rav Huna's Aron as a shield to protect himself from the fire. Ben Yehoyada explains differently that it means that he wanted to protect Rav Huna's Aron from the fire, and therefore by standing it up, he stood it up in a position where it would be protected from the fire, and for that Rav Chaga, like this, even though Rav Chaga was in a very dangerous situation over there, he was not punished, he wasn't harmed by the fire because he had protected Rav Huna's Aron by standing it up. A number of the Rishonim have a girsa, and Tosfos brings it also, that what it actually is the family of the Reish Galusa was not punished because Rav Chaga set up the Aron. So what does that mean? We just said that either we're talking about over here Rav Huna Reish Galusa from the times of Rebbe, or we're talking about the more famous Rav Huna, the Talmud of Rav, but he was from the family of the Reish Galusa. So the explanation according to that would be that because in a certain sense it was a bizoyan to Rav Huna. It comes out, according to many of the Mephoshim, Rav Shlomo ben Ayosim and others say this explicitly, that it comes out Rav Huna's Aron was left there standing upright and still there adayim azeh. Now that's not a right, that's not a respectful way to bury somebody. You bury somebody laying down. To bury somebody standing up is considered a big bizoyan. So according to that, the explanation is the fact that Rav Huna is in such bizoyan that brought about a kapara for his family, the Rosh Galusa. We find that the Rosh Galusa in various times were not always such great people. Sometimes they were downright chutzpahdik towards the Chachamim and so forth. So the reason why they didn't, in future generations, why they didn't get punished and they continued to flourish would be in the schus of their relative or ancestor, Rav Huna, that he was buried in such an undignified way. Another point that some of the Mephoshim say is maybe the vote is, even though we're saying that Chizkiya moved or was moved over, still there wasn't enough room to bury Rav Huna lying down in the usual position, and therefore they had to bury him standing upright. So it's a bit of a difficult thing to understand this Gemara over here. But in any case, that's what happened. The Yerushalmi finishes off that the Rav Chaga himself had a schus. Like I said before, the Yerushalmi says he was 80 years old. He lived another 80 years after this in the schus of taking care of Rav Huna's body and trying to bury it properly. Okay, so the Gemara continues. When Rav Chista passed away, Rav Chista, who we had before, was the Talmud Chaver of Rav Huna and had been taking charge of things during Rav Huna's Levaya. Now, when Rav Chista himself passed away, so again, they thought to put a Sefer Torah on his mitzvah. Omelahu Rabbi Yitzchak, but Rabbi Yitzchak told, and then again, to say, Ki Yimzeh, Mashakot Bazeh. But Omelahu Rabbi Yitzchak, but Rabbi Yitzchak told them, no. Again, Milsa de la Rabbe le Spirale, something that his Rebbe didn't hold of. That you should put it on the mitzvah, as we said. Rav Huna didn't hold, as we said before. Rav Huna wouldn't sit on a bed with a sefer Torah with on it, and therefore Rav Chista himself said it's not right to do that for Rav Huna. Anan nekum nevet lei. Should we go and do it for Rav Chista? No. So therefore we shouldn't do that either. Like we said before, Rav Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda is a rare exception, but we don't usually do that. Next, Savor de la Mishla Karayu. Now the Chachamim also thought by Rav Chista's Levaya that. We tore our clothes for him because we learned before Chacham Shemes HaKol Korevav. We said that when a Chacham passes away, then everybody's considered as relatives and everybody tears Kriya for him. So now they tore Kriya. They thought we have to consider Rav Chista like our father, and therefore we can't Deloy L'Mishla Karayu. We're not even allowed to baste the Kriya, the tear in the garment, at least until after Shiva. But Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'ami told them, no, Chacham, actually the din is when a Chacham passes away and you tear Kriya for him, as soon as they turn around their faces from the bed, in other words, as soon as they leave the Levaya, then they're allowed to baste, like basting means, in other words, like wide stitches, like not neat stitches where the garment is thoroughly sewn up, but just like basting in order to hold the edges together, kind of. So you're allowed to do that as soon as they turn around their faces from Achorei Amita. Tosfos brings a girsa mipshum kvoidoi, and the meaning is Tosfos says because of the covet of the chacham shouldn't be walking around all day wearing torn clothes, so therefore he should be allowed to baste it right away. Although Tosfos says v'lo nehira, it seems a little hard to understand that, maybe because if you have to do it after a parent, why shouldn't you have to do it after a chacham as well? But anyway, that's the halacha. As soon as you leave the levaya, you're allowed to baste it. Another story involving when the Chachamim passed away and by the Levayas, ki noch nafshe de Rabba Bar Huna v'Rab Hamnuna. When Rabba Bar Huna, so he's the son of the Rab Huna that we were talking about before, when he and Rab Hamnuna both passed away, apparently they both passed away around the same time, askinu lahasam, so they're bringing up their bodies there to Eretz Yisrael to be buried. Ki motu agishra. When they came to a bridge on the way, and the bridge was too narrow, then the aronis, the coffins, were being carried on camels, and there wasn't enough room. The bridge wasn't wide enough for the two camels to walk next to each other. They would have to go single file. So Komu Gamli, the camels that are carrying the aronis, stopped. They wouldn't go. So an Arab merchant asked the people over there, "My hai, what's going on? Why won't the camels move?" There's an interesting explanation. I think of Shlomo ben Hayosim says that this Arab was not stam a passerby. He was actually the owner of the camels. So he's the camel driver helping them go. So now he's wondering, why won't the camels go? And the people by the Levaya told him, Rabbonan to Ka'avi Kora Adadi, because these Chachamim are giving honor to each other, neither one wants to go first. So one of them is saying, you Rebbe should go first. And the other one is saying that you should go first. So therefore, they've got a stalemate over here. Now, by the way, there is a Gemara in Brachas that says Ein Mechabdim B'Gshorim, that when you come to a bridge like that, a narrow bridge, there's no din that you have to honor the other person and let them go first. Whoever's there first goes first. So why over here are we saying? Tosfos explains over there that there's a difference between you have two people meet up on the road and then they come to a bridge versus here where they set out together to begin with. So therefore, so each one feels the other one is a greater Talmud Chacham and therefore wants him to go first. Omar, so the Arab says, Dinahu, it seems that the right way of doing things would be, and there's a girsa over here that actually he says, if I was the dayan, if I was the one who was judging this, I would say, the Rabba Bahuna, Leo Beresha, that Rabba Bahuna should be the one to go first. And again, there's a girsa over here that you have in various kisviyad and whatever, that he says that Rabba Bahuna is a gavra bar gavra. He's a great man, the son of a great man. In other words, Rabba Bar Rav Huna, we said his father was Rav Huna, the great Talmid Chacham. On the other hand, Rav Hamnuna is not mentioned with his father's name, implying that his father was a Poshet Yid. So therefore, this Arab is arguing that Rabba Bar Huna should get to go first. So sure enough, Cholik Gamle de Rabba Bar Huna, so the camel carrying Rabba Bar Huna's Oren ended up going first. But the Arab got his punishment for interfering, not to koche the shine dahu taya, that Arab merchant, his jaws and his teeth fell out because he insulted Rav Hamnuna. In other words, Marashal says, okay, he has a valid point that the fact that Rabba Bar Rav Huna has greater yichus and therefore you should go first. On the other hand, he's ignoring the fact that Rav Hamnuna is a tremendously great Talmid Chacham, and maybe that should outweigh. Torah, after all, outweighs yichus. So he's ignoring that, and therefore he deserves a punishment for that. There's a different explanation also. Again, there's a girsa, we don't have it in front of us in the Gemara, but there's a girsa that he said that he called Rabba Bar Rav Huna Gavra Bar Gavra, a man, the son of a man, meaning, in other words, that he didn't even say Gavra Rabba. At least if he had said Gavra Rabba Bar Gavra Rabba, meaning a great man, the son of a great man, fine, you could say it's not disrespectful to Rav Hamnuna or to anybody else. He's saying he's a great man, and his father, Rav Huna, was also a great man. But instead, he's using the expression Gavra Bar Gavra, a man, the son of a man. So what are you implying? Rav Hamnuna is not a man, and his father is not a man. So that's a chutzpahdika thing, and therefore, for that, he lost his teeth in punishment for that. So now it came to the hesped. So what was the hesped that they said on these two chachamim? Posach alayahu yenuka, a young boy started the hesped as follows: Geza yishishim olam mibavel, a descendant of the elderly. Yishishim means elderly. Geza means like somebody from the trunk, like you have when you talk about geza chassidim. It comes from the same word. So a branch of Yeshishim, of the elderly, Olam Bavel, came from Bavel. So Rashi explains that Geze Yeshishim would refer to Rabba Bar Rav Huna, who again is a son of great Talmid Chachamim, because we said his father, Rav Huna, was a great Talmid Chacham and was the Reish Galosa, at least from the family of the Reish Galosa. So therefore, he can be called Geze Yeshishim. A different explanation is that actually Geze Yeshishim can actually refer to Rav Hamnuna. We said he came from a Poshita family, but on the other hand, he was a Talmud of great Talmid Chachamim. So in that case, he can also be called a branch of elderly, respectable Talmid Chachamim. So Olam Bavel came up from Bavel. The Imoi Sefer Mochamos, and with him was the Book of Wars. Now, the Book of Wars, Rashi's first explanation, means the Sefer Torah. In other words, he was a tremendously great Talmid Chacham. So it's as if he brought the whole Torah along with him. Rashi's second explanation is that Sefer Milchamos refers to the fact that we had this argument between Rabba Bar Rav Huna and Rav Hamnuna, where the Arab ended up being caught in the crossfire. So therefore, we can describe that as like there was, so to speak, a Milchama. Marashal also explains that Gezi Yeshishim can refer to Rabba Bar Rav Huna, and the Imo Sefer Milchamos would be along with him came Rav Hamnuna, who was a tremendous Talmid Chacham who knew how to fight the battles of Torah. Anyway, continues the hesped. The idea with all these hespedim is that you want to arouse the people to realize what a tremendous loss there is, and to cry and to mourn for the person who passed away. So therefore, they would use this poetic language, and this way people would realize the magnitude of what happened. It's kind of interesting and kind of funny, actually. If you look in the old Sansino translation, English translation of Shas, you'll find that all of these aspadim that are on this Amud, they rendered them all into rhymed English, and they actually loosely translated each one into English with rhymes. Anyway, so he continues. Kos v'kipod huchbalu, the kos and the kippod, which are various kinds of birds that live in wastelands. So they were multiplied. Rashi explains that kos and kippod are an expression of klala. You find them in connection. For example, the Navi says that the land of Edom is going to be desolate and is going to be the place where kos and kippod, where these kinds of birds that live in desolate areas live. So in other words, the idea is he's saying that tremendous klala has come and been doubled in the world, that two such great chachamim passed away. Maharsha says the kos, the kippod, can also be a hint about this Arab who was there and ended up and his teeth ended up falling out. The Arabs are compared to Ophis Tmei, and they're compared in various places in Shas to non-kosher birds. So therefore, so like they were multiplied, like they came there, Ludus, the Shod Vashever, Habomishinar, to see the destruction and the breakage that came from Shinar, meaning which Shinar is another name for Babel. So in other words, so according to Rashi, this line, Kos Vakibod Huchulu, Ludus Bashod Vashever, Habomishinar, is describing how much klala came to the world now and is doubled in the world. This that Hashem brought all this rage and all this breakage and disaster to the world by these chachamim passing away. According to Maharsha, on the side of it here, it brings from the Aruch that even the non-kosher birds that live out in the deserts, they came to see what happened. And according to Maharsha, it's a hint on the Arab that he was there. He's compared to a non-kosher bird, and he was there to see the disaster, and he ended up getting what he deserved. He continues the Hesped, Kotzaf Aloi Lomai, Hashem was angry on his world, that he took away such chachamim from it, v'chomas mimenu nefoshes, so he grabbed or stole away nefoshes from it, v'samach behem, but Hashem is happy with those neshamas in Gan Eden, k'kala chadosha, like a new kala, like we have, a chosen gets married, and he's happy with his new kala, doing shona reshona, the same way Hashem is happy that he has these neshamas of the tzaddikim with him in Gan Eden. And they finishes off, Ruch of Arobis, the Hashem who rides above Arobis. We're going to learn in a few weeks in Chagiga, that's the Hashem, that there was several levels of Shemaim, and one of them is called Arobis. So Hashem who rides over Arobis, Sos v'sameach, he's happy and joyous, b'voyel of nefesh, noki v'tzadik, when the neshama of the pure and the tzaddik comes to him. So in other words, this was the hesped, realizing, in other words, Hashem is happy that he has the neshamas of the tzaddikim, but we here on earth should realize the tremendous disaster and the tremendous catastrophe that we have by these chachamim passing away. So now again, we're going to mention a couple of hespedim that they said on other chachamim. The Gemara says, Ki noch nafshe di Ravina, when Ravina passed away, one of the maspidim started his hesped. They used to have professionals who did this. They wouldn't just have, like nowadays, you just call up anybody to give a speech. In Chabad, you don't do a spadim at all. But anyway, you say stories about the nifter doing shiva. But in the belt where they do a spadim, so they have, they call various people to give a spadim. And in those times, they had professionals who would give speeches, who would give speeches and poems, like we're saying over here, to arouse everybody to cry over it. So now, posachaleya, who's safdona, so a certain safdona, one of these professional maspidim, started the hesped on Ravina, tmorim, palm trees, which is a metaphor for the Jewish people in general and for Talmid Chacham in particular, like Tzadik HaTamar Yifra, Honiu Rosh, you should shake your heads in sadness al Tzadik Katomer, about Tzadik who was like a palm tree, meaning Ravina. Nosim Leilas Kayomim, we should make the nights like the days. In other words, we should continue the Hesped during the nights as well, not just during the day. Al Mesim Leilas Kayomim, in mourning for the one Ravina who spent his nights just like his days learning Torah. Omelet of Ashi the Bar Kippurk. So now, in a similar vein, Rav Ashi asked Bar Kippurk, who was one of the professional maspidim of those times. He says, "Ahu yoma my amrit, on that day, what will you say?" Now, so one explanation is that Rav Ashi is asking Bar Kippurk, "What when I pass away? What do you plan to say? What is your hesped going to consist of?" Now, why is Rav Ashi curious about such a thing? So one explanation is because Rav Ashi wants to know how how does the Welt see his accomplishment? How does the Welt, represented by the professional Maspidim, like by people, how do they view Rav Ashi's accomplishments? After all, a tzaddik, a Talmid Chacham is not just there to learn Torah and do mitzvahs for himself. He's doing it on behalf of the whole Jewish people, especially Rav Ashi, who organized the Gemara as we have it. So he wants to know how the world, how his generation is seeing what he is seeing his accomplishments, and that way he'll know where he still has to work on and what he still has to inform the olam to be aware of. On the other hand, Rabbi Hananel learns differently. He says that he's asking about Kippur, what did you say by Rabbinah's Levaya? So according to that, he's just asking him in the past. Rav Ashi hadn't been there by the Levaya, so he asked about Kippur, what did you say? Omalei, so Bar Kippur says, Amina, I said, or I will say, by your Levaya, Im barozin nafla shal hebef, if the flame has attacked even the cedar trees, meaning the great Talmid Chachamim, mayasu ezovei kir, what are the little mosses, that the little grasses that grow on the wall, what are they going to do? In other words, the idea is, if even the great Talmid Chacham and Tzaddik passed away, then everybody else, the Hamoin Am, should be much more fearful that they could be in bigger trouble as well. And he continues, Liv Yosin b'chaka hoyala, the great Liv Yosin was caught with a hook. Mayasu d'gei rakak, what should the little fish in the little puddle do? In other words, they should be much more afraid. Same metaphor. And he continues, b'nachal shoytif nofla chaka. In a flowing stream, there's a chaka. Now, we just had the word chaka in the previous line meant a hook. Here, it could also mean a hook, meaning that even if you're able to catch fish in a stream in a flowing stream where the current is fast, ma yasu may gave him. Then what should the fish in the little ponds do? In other words, it's much more easier to catch them. There's a couple on the other possibility though, is the Aruch says that the word chaka over here means dryness. And in fact, there's Kisveyad, where they have the Girsa Chorova, which also means dryness. So in other words, the third part of the metaphor is if even the fast-flowing stream dries up, how much more so the little ponds are going to dry up much faster. So why he used three expressions like that, there's an explanation from the Shalom HaKadosh that he's talking about the three different stages of the Tzaddik's life before he was born, when during his lifetime, and after. He passed away, and each one is referring to a different one of those. So Omalei Ba'oven, who was another professional masjid, was standing over there and overhearing the conversation. He says, Chas v'shalom d'chaka v'shalheves v'tzadiki amina, Chas v'shalom, that you would use expressions like a hook and a flame regarding tzadikim. Tzadikim don't go into the flame of Gehenna. They don't get caught with a hook like a fish. It's disrespectful to talk about tzadikim with those kinds of metaphors. So Bar Kippur says, okay, my amrit, so what would you say? What will you say by Rav Ashi's Levaya, or what did you say by Rabbinah's Levaya? So he says, Amina, b'chu la'aveilim v'loy la'aveda. You should cry on behalf of the Aveilim and not for the lost object, meaning the tzaddik, shehi l'menucha, because the lost object is going to its rest. V'onu la'anocha, whereas we're still here sighing and krechting over the tzaddik passing away. Now, the Gemara says, Cholash daite alayhi. Rav Ashi felt bad at what they both said. So now, if we say that they were talking about, like Rabbi Hananel says, that they were talking about what they had said by Rabbinah's Levaya, then he felt that this is very disrespectful to talk of, even the second one, even by Oven, it's disrespectful to talk about a Talmid Chacham that way. What do you mean he's lost? A Talmid Chacham and what he accomplished in the world is not lost. Like the Alter Rebbe brings from the Zohar, Yatir Mibchayoi, he's in this world more than he was when he was alive. So what do you mean you're calling him an Aveda, like he's a lost object? According to the explanation, and also actually Rabbi Hananel says, according to the explanation that it was about Rabbinah's Levaya, then Rav Ashi feels bad. It comes out from this that they're comparing, they're saying Rabbinah is like a tall cedar tree, and all the other Chachamim of that time, including Rav Ashi, are just like little grasses and mosses growing out of the wall. So it's a disrespectful way to talk about the other tzaddikim of that time, including Rav Ashi. According to the explanation that they're talking about what they plan to say about Rav Ashi's own Levaya, again, even the second one is disrespectful, because certainly the first one, talking about him as though he's like going to be like a tree that was burnt by fire or a fish caught by a hook, but even the second one, where they're calling him an Aveda, a Talmid Chacham, a Tzaddik, is never lost from the world. And also, And Rav Shlomo ben HaYosim points out that another reason Rav Ashi felt bad is because as soon as he asks them, what would you say by my Levaya? What do you mean we're going to say such and such? You should have Arichus Yomim. We shouldn't have to be saying anything by your Levaya. Or how could we even think what we're going to say by the Levaya? We're going to be so crushed by it that we wouldn't be able to say anything. Like this, they're so cold-bloodedly saying, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that. So Rav Ashi feels, so Rav Shlomo ben HaYosim says, that's why Rav Ashi felt bad. The result was, their feet got turned over. They were punished, Min HaShemayim, that they got some kind of disease in their feet, where instead of a regular person walks on the soles of their feet, instead their feet got flipped over so that they ended up, then now they're having to walk on the tops of their feet. So in other words, like this, you have their feet would normally be like this with the sole underneath, like this, their feet got turned over and now they're having to walk like this. They're having to walk on the fronts of their feet, on the tops of their feet, instead of on the bottoms. That was their punishment. So that was their punishment for insulting Rav Ashi like that. So sure enough, when Rav Ashi eventually did pass away, then they didn't come to be masked with him because they couldn't make it, because they couldn't walk. This explains what Rav Ashi says in connection with the dinim of chalitza, loy bar kippuk chalitz v'loy bar oven chalitz. Neither bar kippuk nor bar oven would be able to do chalitza because the Gemara explains in Yevamos, we're going to learn in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, that when a person's feet are deformed like that and they don't walk on the bottoms of their feet, they cannot do chalitza because chalitza has to be me'al ragla, that they take the Yevama takes the shoe off the foot, whereas like this, it would be like Moshi taking it out from underneath the foot. So therefore, Sarav Ashi wants you to know that somebody who has that kind of deformity, like Bar Kippuk and Bar Oven have, would not be able to do Chalitza. So now we see that's in fact what happened to them. Why do they deserve that punishment? Marsha points out one reason is because, again, they're saying that the tzaddik is lost and gone from the world. What's the whole idea of Chalitza? Is that the neshama of the mess is still in limbo. It's like stuck over there. And therefore, by doing Yibum or Chalitza, you help the neshama of the nifter. Well, since they spoke about Rav Ashi's neshama as if it's like completely gone from the world, so therefore, they were punished in a way where if they had to do Chalitza, they would be unable to do that. The Gemara says, since we're talking about tefillos that they said in tefillos or hespedim that they said, and we mentioned this about Oven. So the Gemara says, Rava ki have also the diglas. When Rava would come to the diglas, which is the Chideko River, and he was going to cross it, and it was sometimes dangerous. The current would be very fast, and there's a concern that the ferry might overturn. So he says to Bar Oven, the pastor is the same Bar Oven as before, come and say something, say a tefillah that to ask Hashem to protect us. There's a different explanation. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that maybe the word is not ki osa lid diglas, but rather ki osa diglas when the diglas, the Chideko River, is threatening to flood the city. So he's asking Bar Oven to get up and say a tefillah to Hashem that the water should go away. The Koiva Omar, so Bar Oven got up and said, Bo'u roiv shlishis b'mayim, most of the shlishis has come into water, which means, Rashi explains, the Jewish people can be called shlishis for one reason, because you have the Gemara and Shabbos, for example, that says the Jewish people are made up of three groups, Koinim, Levim, Yisraelim. We have a Torah that has three parts, Torah, Levim, and Ksuvim, and so forth. So therefore, the Jewish people can be called shlishis, metaphorically. Rabbah, being the head Rosh Hashiva of that time, is considered like most of the Jewish people. So if his life is in danger, then it's as if most of the Jewish people are in danger. There's a few other explanations, one of them being that shlishis refers to the dry land, because the world is divided into three basic kinds of places. You have settled land, you have deserts, and you have rivers and oceans. So they have rivers and lakes and oceans. So therefore, the dry land where people live, the settled land where people live can be called shlishis. So he's saying that has come into water. Zechor v'rachem, remember and have rachmonus on the Jewish people. We've strayed from following you, like a woman who strayed from her husband. But al taznichenu, but don't reject us. Ka'ois me'mara, give us the sign, like you gave, give us a sign
like with the bitter water, meaning a sota, in other words, continuing the metaphor, like a sota, if there's a question whether she was faithful to her husband or not, and we use the mei sota to check her, and if it turns out that she's innocent, then it strengthens her. So the same way, Bar Oven is saying in his tefillah that Hashem should help, that he should allow the Jewish people to come out vindicated from this, like a sota comes out vindicated after drinking the mei hamarim. So again, according to Rashi, the vote is that he's davening that Rava should be able to cross the river safely. According to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he's davening that the river should not flood, but rather that that shouldn't flood and destroy the city, but rather that it should rather that the extra water should help the crops or whatever. I'll bet it's like the Mei Sota, which can cause the Sota to blow up or can make her stronger. The same way, saying instead of this water causing the fields and everything and the houses and whatever to be harmed, better let it be that it fertilizes them, that it improves them. So now the Gemara gives Chanin, Yochanan, Zera, Abba, Yaakov, Yossi, Shmuel, Chia, Menachem, Simon. This is a simon of what happened when various Chachamim passed away. So the first one, Rav Chanin Chasne de Benesia Abba, Rav Chanin was the son-in-law of the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't have any children. Bar Rachmi, so he davened for Rachmanos to Hashem, Bahavalei, and he had a child. But Hahu Yoima de Havalei, on the day that the child was born, Noch Nafshe Reb Chanin passed away. Posachalayahu Safdona. So one of the Maspidim started the Hesped. Simcha Latuga Nefcha. The joy has been turned into mourning. Sosin the Yogan Nidbuku. The joy and the sadness have been joined together. The Ace Simchose Nenach. At the time of his Simcha, he was sighing. The Ace Chaninose. At the time, when he should be showing favor, when he should be playing around with his newborn baby, Ovad Chaninoi, the one who would show him favor, the father who would be playing with him whenever, has been lost and passed away. Why the triple expression? Marsha says, because you have, when a baby is born, when a firstborn baby boy is born, you have three simchas. You have the birth, the bris, and you have the birth right away, you have the bris at 8 days, and you have the pidyon haben at 30 days. Instead, what happened over here, each of these milestones, you have on the day that the baby was born, they're burying his father, on the day when it should have been his bris, the shiva is over, and on the day that is pidyon haben is the end of the shloshim, so therefore that's why the Safdon used this triple expression. The Gemara says, asifu lechonon al shmei, and they named the baby Chonon after his father. Now there's an interesting. So this is where we have, for example, that a baby's bris is after his father passes away. You name him after his father. Our own Rav Motto Gerari, Alav Shalom, was like that. His father passed away a few months before he was born, and he was named Mordechai after his father. With that said, though, there is sometimes they say that a person passed away young, you shouldn't use the exact same name. You should use a variation of the name, or you should add a name because the fact that he passed away young maybe is not such a simon toy.
Right?
What?
Ashkenazim.
This is Ashkenazim, right. Yeah. Sfardim anyway, name after the living, right. But so we see over here in the Gemara that the father was named Chanin and they named the son Chonon. So there are some Sfardim that say, based on that, you see that you should change the name slightly. Because we see Rav Chanin passed away young and we see they named his son Chonon. On the other hand, in Kisva Yad of the Gemara, they have the name Chonon or Chonin for both of them, so it's not necessarily a strong raya. So some people have the minhag that they add a name when they're naming after somebody who passed away young, some people don't. Next one, the Gemara says, Ki noch nafshe de Rav Yochanan. When Rav Yochanan passed away, Posach alei Rav Yitzchok ben Elazar, Rav Yitzchok ben Elazar started the hesped saying, Kosha hayoim li Yisrael, ki yoim boi Hashemesh batzorayim. Today is as difficult for the Jewish people as a day when the sun sets at noon. Dichtiv. As the Pasuk says, Bahoya Bayemahu, the Novi says, it'll be on that day, Behevesi Hashemesh batzorayim, I will bring the sun down in the middle of the day. And Omer Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan himself had said, Ze Yoyme Shal Yoshiyahu, that refers to the day of Yoshiyahu. We learned in Masechta Tainis a while back that Yoshiyahu was one of the greatest kings of Yehuda. He had gotten rid of Avodah Zarah from all over Eretz Yisrael and done other tremendously great things. But in the end, he got killed in battle when he was only 39 years old. So therefore, the Navi describes that metaphorically as like the sun setting in the middle of the day. So now Rav Yitzchok ben Elazar is saying that now when Rabbi Yochanan passed away is just as much of a catastrophe for the Jewish people as that. Mind you, by the way, Yoshiyahu passed away very young, 39. Rabbi Yochanan was very old when he passed away. In Rabbi Shura Goen brings in his Igeres that Rabbi Yochanan had been Rosh Hashiva for 80 years, which means obviously that he had to be at least 100 years old. Okay, Jodas Rishonim says based on various angles that maybe it wasn't 80 years, maybe it was 60 years, the different possible years. But still, Rabbi Yechanan was pretty old when he passed away. But still, Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Elazar was saying that still it was still too soon. He still should have lived longer. The Gemara continues. Kinoch nafshe did Rabbi Yechanan. Also, when Rabbi Yechanan passed away, Yosef Reb Ami Shiva Ushloishim, Reb Ami, who was one of Rabbi Yechanan's head Talmidim, he sat full Shiva and full Shloishim for Rabbi Yechanan. However, Omer Rab Abba, Redir Chiva Abba, Reb Ami De'ovad Lagamehu De'ovad. This that Reb Ami did was actually only his own personal daya. The halacha is not like that. Dahochi Omer Rab Chiva Abba, Omer Rab Yechanan, you should know that Rab Chiva Abba said in the name of Rab Yechanan, Afilu Rabbi Shalim Dei Chochma, even when it's your Rebbe who taught you a tremendous amount of Chochma, who taught you all the Torah you know, Eini Yoshev Olav Ela Yom Echad, you only sit Shiva for one day. And since Mitzvah Kekuloi, it's not even one full day. Gimel Tammuz, for example, we all taught Kriya and we all sat for a little while, but then you get up afterwards and you go about your day. So this that Rab Ami sat Shiva and Shloshim was his shita, but the halacha is not like that. So one more of the hespedim, and then we'll continue. Kinoch nafshe did Rab Zera. When Rab Zera passed away, posach alayahu sapdona, one of the maspidim started the hesped. Eretz Shinar Horav Yolda, the land of Shinar, which is Babel, had become pregnant and gave birth, because Rav Zera originally was from Babel. He grew up there. He became a tremendous Talmid Chacham over there. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. So he continues, Eretz Zvi Gidla Shashuel, the beautiful land, meaning of Eretz Yisrael, raised her precious thing, meaning that Rav Zera moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael and continued being one of the great Chacham over there. Oy Nalo Omer Rakas. Now Rakas should say woe to her. Rakas, as the Gemara explains in Megillah, is another name for Tveria, which is where Rav Zera lived. Ki Ovda Kli Chamdasa, because she's lost her precious vessel. In other words, the people of Tveria should realize what a tremendous loss they have, that Rav Zera, the great Talmid Chacham and Tzaddik who lived among them, has now passed away. Now the Gemara, by the way, tells us in Sanhedrin that in Rav Zera's neighborhood there were these biryonim, there were these guys who were not careful at all about Torah and mitzvahs and harassed the Chachamim and all, and they used to even make fun of Rav Zera and the Chachamim. But Rav Zera always tried to be makar of them, and when he passed away, they realized, you know what, now we don't have anybody to daven for us anymore, we better do tshuva, and we did. So we see that the people of Rakas, even the Rekonin Shabbat, and even the empty ones of Rakas, Taka realized what a great loss they had when Rav Zera passed away, and they ended up doing tshuva. So we'll continue tomorrow, best Hashem, with events that happen when the various Chachamim passed away.